Welcome back. It's midday. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. Now we're going to have a conversation with a writer who grew up here in Baltimore and has become one of the most highly respected cartoonists and essayists on the literary scene today. For more than a decade, his cartoon, The Pain, When Will It End?, ran in the city paper here in Baltimore and in other alternative weeklies around the country. His cartoons have been published in 3 books, and his work has also appeared in the New York Times, The New Yorker, and elsewhere. Tim Kreider, his latest book of essays, is a collection about essays concerning love, love that is requited and unrequited, love for his cat, love for his best friend, love at the circus, and even how scientists study our capacity to love. It is a really great collection. It's called I Wrote This Because I Love You. Tim Kreider has returned to his hometown for an event at Atomic Books tonight at 7 o'clock, and he joins me here in Studio A. It's great to meet you.
You as well. I don't want to start out with a correction, but it's I Wrote This Book Because I Love You.
Oh, I Wrote This Book. That's right. Of course. It's a whole book. It's a whole book of essays, right? I Wrote This Book, not just I Wrote This Because I Love You. That could have been just like a post-it or something.
My persnicketiness is not going to set the tone for this interview.
No, that's okay. You could be as persnickety as you feel like it. It's interesting that you've taken on the subject of love. Like, nobody else has ever thought of that, right? Nobody else has ever taken that on. But I mean, given the fact that the literature is, you know, since time eternal, has concerned itself in every way, shape, and form with this universal topic. That's a tough assignment for yourself. And bravo to you for completing it so beautifully.
Well, thanks. In retrospect, it may have been a mistake. I had the equivalent of second album syndrome. You exhaust all your A material with your first book, and then what do you do? And what I did was go deeper, back to the stuff that I'd avoided the first time around. A friend of mine and I call it going back for the snakes. It's an allusion to a scene in Pee-wee's Big Adventure where there's a fire in a pet store and he rescues all the animals except for the snakes, which he fears, and finally has to go back for them and runs out with these writhing armfuls of snakes and faints dead away on the pavement. So I went back in for the snakes in this book, into the stuff that I avoided writing about first time around.
Were you thinking like, oh my gosh, I got to come up with something new? I have to have some new... You know, revelation about the notion of love, as, you know, all these people for centuries have thought about it. That's really tough. I would be daunted by that.
Yeah. Well, I may not have thought it through when I took on that theme. I did try at least to make none of these conventional boyfriend-girlfriend stories. As you said, you know, there's all different kinds of... I mean, this is one of the things I sort of... One of the few conclusions I came to in writing this book is that when we say love or relationship or marriage, we all think we're talking about the same thing, but there are a lot of different deals worked out there. And I wrote about accidentally falling in love with a friend. I wrote about a friend with benefits. I wrote about an ex-girlfriend whom you still love in a way. And as you said, I wrote about my cat. It would be hard to say whether that was requited love or not.
Yeah. and the one you say you accidentally fell in love with your best friend. You call her Lauren in the book. That was a particularly compelling essay.
Oh, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
Well, this is a procedure I would not recommend to any writer, but I was trying to smush together two disparate things to see what connections I could find between them. That turns out to be a laborious and trial and error process. For a long time, I'd thought about writing that relationship because I think that happens to a lot of people. You've got a friend at work, maybe they're off limits for whatever reason, maybe they're married, and yet you spend so much time together, you accidentally kind of fall in love with them, and then you have to figure out a way to fall back out. And she and I actually did manage that transition successfully.
So you stayed friends?
Yeah, we are still good friends. Mm-hmm. And so once in a while, I'd call her up and say, I'm thinking about writing this essay. And we'd have a heart-to-heart talk about that. And then I'd always back off and think, it's not quite enough yet. And I also always wanted to write a kind of history of the war on terror, sort of after Thucydides' History of the Peloponnesian War, right about what it felt like on the ground to not, you know, on the ground, I mean as a civilian, just what it felt like in the air in America to live through that time. And eventually I realized maybe I could smush those two together and they could be one essay.
Yeah, because many of these essays are keyed to what was going on in the body politic at the time that you were in the relationship with these people.
Well, I suffered from this worry that relationships were a silly, trivial, frivolous thing to write about. And I'm still torn between worrying that and thinking, well, maybe they're really the most important thing in life. So I tried to make each of these essays not just about the relationship that is ostensibly its subject, but also about, for example, the war on terror or the history of attachment theory or the circus.
Yeah. Let's start with the history of attachment theory.
Sure.
One of the essays called The Strange Situation.
Yeah.
And it involved a study at Johns Hopkins. And you, mm-hmm. as I mentioned, you grew up here in Baltimore and you were one of the original subjects in this actual real study thing.
Yes, I was in sample two of This Strange Situation in 1967. That was a seminal study in child development and in attachment theory that was developed by Mary Ainsworth here at Johns Hopkins University in 67 or 66. And yeah, my mom entered me into it. I guess she saw a flyer at a pediatrician's office. And this is now the go-to method for assessing infants' attachment style or pattern, as they call it.
It's their relationship with their mothers and stuff,
yeah,
and their parents.
I mean,
or their fathers too.
Mm-hmm. They cluster into three distinct groups, securely attached and two varieties of insecure attachment, anxious and avoidant. And the thing to know about these for us grown-ups is that those are remarkably persistent in longitudinal studies. Like 70-some percent of us are still classed the same way that we would have been then. Although using a different methodology of classification, I should say. So who knows?
Yeah. But so you actually went back to the folks who were involved in the study to try to find out what it is they psyched out about you back then. And then you examined whether or not that was still true for your life today.
Yeah, well, this isn't really a spoiler, but I didn't get access to the original data on myself, which was anonymous. I did find the researcher, the grad student, actually, who had conducted the sample I was in, and who is still a practicing psychoanalyst here in Baltimore. And we had an interesting talk that was part interview, part therapy session. It was hard to say which. And, you know, like many psychoanalysts, she is not in the business of handing out answers. She asks you to think about things. She said, I think people go back to the past when they're stuck in the present in some way.
You've had some really terrific relationships. All of the people you dated mm-hmm. that I read about in this book were really fascinating me. They were all terrific people that I would love to meet and love to, you know, get to know.
I'm glad to hear that. It's easy to get all bashful about compliments, but actually that's the one that means the most to me. Someone else wrote that they kind of fell in love with one of the characters in this book. And
yeah.
I'm very happy if I conveyed the immense fondness and devotion I feel.
You've written so personally about this, but let me, for readers who, or listeners who haven't read the book yet, are you married?
I am. Certainly not. No.
Certainly not.
I have never been married or even lived with anybody. That relationship with my cat, which lasted 19 years, was the longest term of my life.
Mm-hmm. And is that a pretty much a stated policy that's never going to happen? Or are you open to the notion that, you know, it might happen?
I wouldn't call that a stated policy. That was a combination probably of, you know, my personal psychology and also some practical considerations. If you're going to be an artist, being married puts a lot of pressure on your career. You kind of have to earn something. I currently have $1.62 in checking. I'm not making that up.
Oh, but
and I'm on my book tour.
It's your savings account that counts, Jim, though. Forget the checking.
I have slightly less than that in savings right now. So, you know, we all make our compromises and forfeitures. But, you know, as I go into in my essay on attachment theory, there may well have been other personal reasons why I never got married. But I've been in several relationships.
You've had wonderful relationships.
Yeah.
And some of which have lasted for quite a long time.
Yeah, well.
And been very gratifying, it seems to me, from reading it.
Well, yeah. As I said, there's a lot of different kinds of relationships in this world, and they don't all fall into the category of boyfriend-girlfriend or marriage. I mean, one of the people I wrote about in this book I went out with when I was 30, and, you know, that relationship didn't last, if we mean, you know, boyfriend-girlfriend relationship, but the relationship
and
is
just
on,
for reference, how old are you now?
I am 50.
Mm-hmm. That's 20 years
but,
ago.
Yeah, and, you know, some of the other ones go back 30 years. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I saw her last night. She's one of my closest friends. The relationship continues in a different form.
It's the first table of contents that I've ever encountered in which there's an asterisk that says, "Mom, do not read this one."
Yeah.
It's called Kind of Love. I'm sure your mom's not listening. She's got better things to do, right?
Oh, but... I assure you, mom's listening. Moms are always listening.
Well, Mom, I've read it and it's not that bad.
Actually, there's three essays I marked Mom, Do Not Read, which I'm sure will be the first everyone reads. And they're not that juicy, really. But you can't really write honestly if you imagine your mom reading over your shoulder. That's just something
I think
you
that's
have
true.
To, yeah, repress.
I think that's true. Well, you know, for what it's worth, Mom, in my opinion, you've done good. You've got a good son here.
I hope we'll save that soundbite for Mom to replay.
There you go. One of the things that I really enjoyed was that the impact or the influence of the different exigencies that existed when you had various girlfriends at various times, or these relationships at various times. The very first essay, I guess, is about a relationship you had with a woman while you were traveling with the circus.
Yeah. Well, she worked for the circus. She was actually the teacher for the children of circus performers, some of whom were also performers themselves, being, you know, publicly flung from one parent to the other 50 feet in the air. She worked for the same service that hires teachers for movie sets. All U.S. kids need to have 180 days of education a year. So even though they live on a train and are with the circus, they got to go to school. So that was her amazing job for a year. And they were going to Mexico City. This was in the 90s when that was reputed, at least, to be an extraordinarily dangerous place. And so she felt the need of some protection. And I'm not really anyone's first choice for bodyguard. But she knew I was free and unemployed and usually up for a caper or an adventure. So, yeah, I rode the Ringling Brothers Barnum & Bailey Circus train down to, San Antonio with her. Then we took a bus to Mexico City and spent a month there.
Yeah, well, it's just one of many really fascinating tales. And I'm just really delighted to make your acquaintance and to have the chance to read this book and have a wonderful time in Atomic tonight. You're back here in your hometown, which is nice.
Yeah, I'm always glad to be back here.
Yeah, well,
I feel at home in Baltimore.
Well, you should. It's good to meet you, and I appreciate it. And good luck with the book.
I'm very glad you liked it so much. Thank you.
Thank you. Tim Kreider, his latest collection of essays is called I Wrote This Book Because I Love You. He'll be at Atomic Books in Baltimore tonight at 7 o'clock, and we've got details about that event at wipr.org/midday. That's it for us today. Coming up Monday on the program, three perspectives on the immigration debate. Jennifer Mendelson is a journalist who has started the hashtag Resistance Genealogy. Perla Guerrero is a scholar who has written a new book about immigrants and the remaking of place. And Maria Elena Hincapié comes back to the show. She's the executive director of the National Immigration Law Center. So they will all join me from midday here on Monday. Hope you can join us too. We want to thank our crew here at Midday. Luke Spicknall is our director and engineer. He also makes terrific roasted Brussels sprouts. Rob Sivak, Sienna Greaves, and Kathleen Cahill produce the program. Jamila Krempel is our digital producer. Happy birthday, Jamila. Austin Coughlin from Clean Cuts wrote and recorded the Midday theme music. We want to thank you again for listening. I look forward to being with you next week. I'm Tom Hall. Have a great weekend.